Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Hi, Tara Diamond from AMA for this episode of Resource People Podcast. And today we've had a conversation with Hamish Johnson, who's the National Manager, Health, Lifestyle and Innovation for Compass Group Australia. Yes, I said his job title correctly, and such a cool title, Health, Lifestyle and Innovation. But the really important topic we talked about was health and wellness campaigns, in particular mental health campaigns, and how they're delivering behaviour change, reducing stigma and creating mental health-based conversations at Compass Group Australia. Enjoy this episode. Hamish, can you get us started with some background on Compass Group and your role in the organisation?
By all means. So Compass is probably recognised as the world's largest provider of food services globally. So it's based in operating across 45 countries with a global workforce in excess of 600,000 people, serving about 5.5 billion meals each year. A client base globally of about 55,000 clients. So scale-wise, massive. Within Australia, Compass Group workforce is about 8,000. And then if we drop down into offshore remote ESS, it's about 2,500. We've got operating across about 106 offshore and remote locations. From a sector perspective, it's not just offshore and remote. Also working in industries, facility management, security. Within my support network was health and wellbeing, but then sectors such as hospital, aged care, defence, universities, schools, airport lounges, and then some of the big corporate players such as the banks, Google, Flight Centre, a couple of our clients. So really quite diverse, really large footprint. My role within Compass Group is predominantly within ESS. So I have a unique role, subject matter expert for the business, and then and lead of a multifaceted department reporting to Executive Director for ESS, John Sheridan. So I lead a talented team of specialists in health, which include exercise physiologists, dietitians, nutritionists, psychologists, physios and injury advisors, through to gym trainers and aquatic specialists, then an events team, delivering events for clients from milestone to, the daily grind on Saturday activity, whatever it might be on a site, through to our own internal events, such as site managers conference. Then I also have a customer experience analyst, a digital team, that look after our boutique designed village application, and then also design and build team that design and build villages or improvements to villages, and also then all the design around collateral posters, PowerPoints, and then probably to wrap it up, we also lead a whole heap of innovation and projects. So projects get to given to the team or identified for the business, and we trial them, try to break them. If they're good, we push them off to operations. So quite diverse.
Absolutely. And your title that's in front of me is National Manager Health, Lifestyle and Innovation. And I've got to say, when I first saw that, I thought, what a cool title. The word lifestyle in your title conjures up all kinds of fabulous ideas like sitting around in pools and things. But as you've just described your role, each of those things really makes sense. And what brings us together for this podcast is a mental health and wellness campaign that you've run called Got Your Back, and that's run for a number of years and won lots of accolades, including AMA's Health and Wellbeing Award in 2019. So congratulations on that, Hamish. But that is how we first heard about your campaign. Can you tell us about Got Your Back?
Firstly, our business is incredibly proud of picking up the award with AMA. It was well received within the business, and when you look at the other programs that other companies deliver, it's always competitive. So to be recognised amongst peers is a really nice thing. Our campaign, it really did resonate within our business. But look, how we got there is probably a bit of a long story. It doesn't just happen overnight. So we did sit down and look at programs throughout the world, and what we saw for those successful programs those impactful programs were programs that resonate with individuals. So our view was we needed something that came from bottom up. So hence the approach in recording stories from volunteers who are willing to share their mental health experience. And that was probably partly influenced from one of the early initiatives where we did a mental health roadshow throughout the East Coast. And we had a number of speakers there and the speaker that really resonated with their audience and really got a raw and genuine response was a person with a lived experience. And maybe that was the penny dropping moment for me, where something as important as mental health, they don't need to hear the research. People don't need to hear me telling the story or corporate telling the story. They want to hear it from someone who's actually living with it, because we often talk about mental health being on that continuum and we're all on it. So if you can listen to someone who's talking about their experience, you start to relate that to yourself. So that was really important.
Thanks so much, Hamish. You mentioned you did a roadshow and had a number of speakers. So what was the catalyst for you to really think about doing a very visible company-wide campaign around mental health specifically?
Yeah, success is, it's the classic coaching term. Success is, doesn't come overnight. It's 10 years to create a champion, they say in coaching. Look, our mental health story started in 2014. It was probably the outcome from some of the parliamentary investigations that started coming into FIFO work practices. There was a lot of media conversation about mental distress within FIFO workforces, and obviously a good portion of our employees work in FIFO. So our company formed a mental health steering committee, and we first looked at policy and procedure, making sure essentially the nuts and bolts were all the right nuts and bolts. And look, everything needed tweaking, so and improved, and that's the courtesy of year-on-year continual best practice. You're always trying to improve. We did a bundle of research, and hands down, that is absolutely critical. Everything that our team does is research-based. It's based on evidence. It's not on fads. And I have to stress that my view on fads is can lead organisations down the wrong path or down the garden path. And fads contribute to what I often refer to as white noise. If you've got too much white noise, the genuine behaviour change that you're trying to instill doesn't get through sometimes. So all that white noise needs to go. So there's often too much of it going around. So we did push forward on a number of mental health promotion strategies, but they were leaning on national campaigns. There's nothing wrong with those national campaigns. But it's just at the time what we were leaning on, such as Are You OK Day, World Mental Health Day, Suicide Prevention Day, Australia's Biggest Morning Tea. You know, there's a whole raft of not-for-profit groups out there doing the right thing, but we probably felt we needed our own. And we saw creating a video about ourselves was going to be that opportunity.
You've just touched on a couple of things I want to come back to, such as behaviour change, health promotion, And you mentioned the real bottom-up approach you wanted this campaign to have. But even the name Got Your Back is just so fantastic because, similarly to Are You Okay, it gives a very personal side as opposed to a very company side to your initiative. The video that we've been referencing is incredibly impactful and features a number of your employees sharing their stories as really the face of the campaign. Can you tell us what kind of behaviour change you were seeking from providing those stories in a really authentic and public way within your organisation? Can you tell us what kind of behaviour change you were seeking by providing stories in a really authentic and public way within your organisation?
You can throw health campaigns out there continually, but what's the point of doing a health campaign if you can't change behaviour for the better, or you can't create a conversation for the better? What is it that you're trying to deliver, and what is the outcome? Yeah, we looked at that bottom-up approach, so using a video, something that was visual, because words, in my view, don't necessarily cut it. People don't have time to read posters. They've got a million other things to do wherever they may be working, and so it was felt a video was the right thing. So we wanted to find volunteers, and they had to volunteer. They had to be willing to share their story. We had to find that gender balance because, although statistically we'll often go straight to worst case scenario and talk suicide, which is predominantly men aged between, say, 24 and 44 years of age, but that's not mental health. That's just one outcome of poor mental health. So we needed to have balance in gender. We also needed to find a mixture of roles, as it doesn't, mental health doesn't affect one demographic of people. It affects those entry levels, people through to those in leadership roles. We also wanted to share that mental health is a myriad of different challenges. So we had a person who suffered depression, we had a person who has anxiety, we had someone who had post-traumatic stress, and we had someone with injury, brain injury. So it was important to ensure the story was broad. So that was really important. And then when we went about interviewing them, we wanted it to be completely raw and unscripted. A 10-minute video actually came from 3 hours of recording. So we really went quite deep, and some of the footage was even more raw than we probably at the time deemed it not necessarily appropriate. I didn't want to go too dark because it needed to be a conversation starter, and that's probably the biggest success from the videos, that it has created conversation.
And that's an incredible outcome in itself, because we know the traditional stigma mental health and wellness has in our communities, let alone our workforces. So can you talk to us a little bit about outcomes? What would you say would be the outcomes, anecdotally or through people that have shared their stories, other people who may have had feedback from within your organisation, and also those people who did share? And what was the response from their teams and managers?
Really interesting question. Like, I know the film hit our global teams. It was shared not only by the global CEO, Dominic Blakemore, but it was shared globally. The views across all the platforms that we had it sitting on, not exactly viral, but that's hard to get a measure because it's downloaded and then saved on someone's computer and replayed to the in remote workplaces. You know, the question is, how do you measure success? If it's simply numbers, then I think anybody will be simply disappointed. I think it's the more maybe the subjective take on it. And we've had volunteers come forward for the next iteration. People willing to share the story. We've had the peer support program start to take hold, and now people wishing to be a part of that. We had people standing up at our managers' conference, visibly moved. And I think that in itself tells a story of leaders standing up in a room of their peers, other leaders, in excess of 150 people, and being visibly moved and saying, wow, I did not know. we need to do something, well, then that's success.
Wow, that's amazing.
For the individuals, they were incredibly proud to be contributors to something that's successful and that the business has a sense of pride in. We also had a miss, and I take that on the chin, in that one of the people, because they all got lots of messages of support and acknowledgement and thank you and appreciation. But if you're generally a quiet, your personality type's probably more introverted, and all of a sudden you're getting all this attention, it can be really confronting. And I didn't really prompt them for what was about to become. And that was probably a bit of a miss for me, because, but once we caught up on it and then gave coping mechanisms, then we were fine. But they were, as I mentioned, grateful and proud, but probably a bit overwhelmed. Probably the last point to that is that a program's success is only as strong as the people who listen to it. And people have to buy into it. It did grow, it has grown legs. The campaign has grown legs. It does resonate. And it is changing behaviour, which is people are willing to have conversations.
Using the phrase "got your back" gives people an opportunity to do just that and say to their friends and colleagues, "Hey, I've got your back." Have you found that that's happened?
Yes. It's almost like we've given a blessing for people to have those conversations. It's given leaders the opportunity to talk to their team and be empathetic. It's given those who may be having a struggle or something the confidence to say, look, put their hand up and say, yeah, look, I'm struggling at the moment, and realise that it's not going to impact their career. Or, yeah, so that's, they're all signs of a successful program, but more than that, it's a sign that we've genuinely improved our understanding of mental health.
And did you find along the journey that your organisation was nervous about doing such an authentic campaign? Was there any concern or questions about, wow, are we really ready to do this? I know people listening may have had questions like that themselves about the type of mental health and wellbeing campaigns they've got in place. But like in all things, you can't wait for everything to be perfect before you do it. There has to be a lived experience as you work through that. Can you provide any advice you had through your experience of having this type of approach to your campaign?
Yeah, look, credit where it's due. Our leadership, my manager, John, the managing director, Shelley, executive director for HR, Rosie, were all incredibly trustful in trusting us to deliver a initiative without having to come in and start editing and pushing, you know, to use the phrase corporate speak, allowing us to tell a story that didn't have all the influence, external influences coming in. So we were able to, with an incredibly good videographer, get right into the rawness of, and I said it was 3 hours of footage. It was allowed us to really get in there and deep. You know, at times it probably was a bit too deep, but I think that is what mental health and health in general is. We don't all just live blissfully forever and a day. There's challenges throughout. So our leadership, their first step was to give trust, and then I think that was returned with something that was this campaign. So what I would also say is that it's allowed us to continue to push better strategies or new and improved strategies or expand the strategies of our health and wellbeing for our workforce. Like it hasn't just stopped and hit a wall. Like the program has allowed us to organically grow further. And I think that in itself is a success in the program, but a contribution from the leadership.
And I do want to talk about some other aspects of the campaign, but before we do, by having those particular people talk about their own experiences so graciously in the video, have they become advocates, or has it enabled people not just to have conversations, but have you found there's been a swell of advocates in your organisation who have been prepared to either speak out about their own experiences or the experiences of family and loved ones and create that culture of people being able to share and be themselves?
Yes, I do think it has. So for the individuals, obviously people now know their stories, so I believe they're comfortable in repeating those stories. Like, it's not a secret anymore. So that in itself, by its very nature, they do become advocates for improved mental health strategies or work practices. But people listen to it. We've got work teams dotted all over the place. And obviously in FIFO, you've got people on different rosters. You can be on the same site and never bump into someone. But what it allowed is other people to go, oh, that resonates with me. Or I can see myself in that scenario. Or I know someone who's in that scenario. And it's allowed conversation to flow. And it's the campaign is the catalyst for the conversation. The conversation may be just that, or it may be someone really gaining a sense of empowerment, and that empowerment then leads to advocacy. And people get caught up in different things for their advocacy. It might be cancer. It could be something else that's health-driven. But for this particular campaign, poor mental health is so insidious. It just like creeps into a community or into a family group, and all of a sudden they're spiraling, say if it's depression, spiraling down into that dark hole, as some of them refer to it. If you're an advocate, you're far more confident saying, hey, I recognize some of these symptoms. Have you thought about reaching out for help? There's Beyond Blue. Go and talk to your doctor for a mental health plan. Let other people know, so you're not having this battle by yourself. That's perhaps the success of advocacy, is they're helping those afflicted by whatever particular challenge might be to go and find a solution.
You've just said something so powerful, which is it's not a secret anymore. It sounds like the campaign really gave people permission to reduce stigma and talk about something that often is so very hard for people to disclose. You just talked about a range of different support functions. And I want to talk about another aspect of your Got Your Back campaign, which is the peer support program. Can you give us a bit of an overview about the peer support program?
Peer support program is still in its infancy. I have to be transparent about that. We piloted through last year, but it's piloting was important because you needed to understand, again, needs to be evidence-based, research-led. All our campaigns or solutions need that as its key underpinnings. And when we piloted, and said at the very start of the podcast today, the scale of our business and its breadth and its geographical footprint, we needed scalability, we needed speed as people move around, so speed of training. And that peer support program, from our research, is identified as one of the most successful ways to be the first line for someone who is distressed or has got mental health issues that they can turn to their peer. They often, and it's strange when you look at the statistical research, they don't turn to their managers, and that's probably there's reasons for that. Interesting, they don't turn to their loved ones, and maybe it's through fear. Sometimes it's friends. They don't like going to the doctor because there might be other issues. It is the peer they turn to. So what is our role as an organisation? Well, then it is to provide identified peers with the tools and I don't like using the word tips, but often the peers are people entry level or lower management positions. They're not in site management roles because people don't want to go and talk to them and say, look, I'm distressed about something, or my loved one's got some really challenging issues going on. They want to turn to a peer and talk it out. But a peer support officer, as we now call them, got your back champions, their role has to be also really clear because there are some legal obligations around disclosure. They must be an active listener. They're not there to gossip or provide. They're not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. They're not there to give health advice. But their role is to essentially be that advocate, guide them in the right direction. So they listen, actually take time out of their day to listen to the story and then persuade them to, hey, you want to reach out to your doctor? Do you want to reach out? Here's the EAP number. I think you should talk to this this person, you know, whatever it may be. Have you seen these resources online? Hey, here's a booklet on distress, or you know, it could be grief and loss. It could be as simple as that, grief and loss. I'm out of sight and my mum is really unwell and I don't know what to do. That is as simple as what peer support is.
It sounds like the Got Your Back campaign, you're really on a journey, and we obviously wish you all the best with the journey and the peer support program that you're developing. We've touched on two elements of the campaign, and I've just mentioned COVID-19, which I'm sure is taking up a lot of your time in your role at the moment. So how has Compass Group been adapting and approaching mental health and workforce resilience through COVID-19?
Yeah, it's been, look, there was the sudden, the overwhelming sort of wall that came to us. All of a sudden, everybody was at work and you knew it was bad overseas. Oh, we're taking these steps as a business. I think if I probably look internally, because that was probably the initial impact that you're all of a sudden, okay, we're going to go down to working a couple of days of the week. Then very quickly, no, everybody's at home and you need to stay at home. And people were unsure what was next. So there was that level of, I have no idea what's going to happen, seeing worst case scenario in other countries. People had to adapt to, yeah, that working from home. I wouldn't say remote work, because as a workforce, particularly my office team, we all travel so much. So using tools such as Microsoft Teams, it wasn't really a dramatic change for a team, because often sitting in a airport lounge before you fly somewhere to having meetings that way. So nothing really there changed, but it was the unknown. But as an organisation, we need a catering. So the food safety standards had to take another step forward. Our clients changed rosters. They wanted improved service standards, improved cleaning standards. So the motelling, as we call, may have changed to more permanency, or it needed to be a deeper clean. So organisation had to change dramatically. We also lost contracts for the period in our other sectors. All of a sudden, banks are all working from home. So there's people that were on stand down or whatever it may be. So if we look at the start of COVID-19, it was a tidal wave of, I don't even know whether I wouldn't actually use the phrase tidal wave. It's more of just rushing water, like a going down, like a flash flood. You know, there's sticks and debris and everything floating everywhere. You had to dodge this, watch that, navigate this. Everybody had an opinion. I think as a country and an industry, we were very progressive and did well in the steps. I mean, we saw within health the gyms close, Qantas close, but we had to pivot. And now, if I look solely at my team and what we do for our clients, it was critical that we pivoted quickly to provide improved services, particularly in the space of health and mental health. So we looked at improved modalities of transferring information to people through fatigue management, because the rosters were changing, resilience, isolation. There were clients where put people into hotels. So we went straight to a lot of virtual health solutions, so virtual fitness, boutique design, injury prevention strategies for being in a room. So what can you do by yourself? All published quite quickly. We had, at 1 PM you could dial on with one of our top physio team members and do Pilates or roll and release exercises. That was all done live and interactive as best we could. So there was a lot of things that we actually saw growth in our space over the past 3 months. And I think we will see further growth in health and well-being or wellness moving forward, because I believe everybody's workforce are now potentially wanting different things. They're now seeing that working from home may be more common than it ever has been. But people want to still engage. They still, as a leadership group, you want your workforce engaged. You want your workforce healthy. You want them productive. And I would argue, to get those things, you need to look at what other solutions there are.
So on that point, if you had a crystal ball for Compass's very large workforce and for your clients, what are some of the things you predict will emerge from a health and wellbeing perspective in the short and medium term?
I think, leaning on technology, one of the really large things, it's harnessing technology appropriately. Long term, there might be a bit more of a deep dive into, say, health biometric data. But then this is not only personal data, but it's the depth of organisational comparative data. So where you could compare locations, what stresses are going on in particular locations, early detection of workforce wellbeing. So knowing early and then being able to act fast, probably say we'd see more bespoke programs, because demographics are often all different. You're not going to have the same demographic in the same geographical location, in different geographical locations. It just doesn't work that way. And we're already seeing that through some of the data capture that we're working on. Further work on influencing positive behavior change, which we've mentioned. I think organizations, you've really got to measure success and show that you are moving that dial. But probably where long term, and that's what I'd say it's the holy grail of workforce health, is progressing to like predictive analytics. Like, if you do this, this is the outcome. And that's probably all the technology space. But then there's just some raw and ready and easy things that organizations need to do, which is be inclusive of the communication. So whether it's as simple as workforce huddle, where everybody can contribute to the conversation, hearing from leadership rather than it being broken down through China's whispers or the myriad of layers. We shouldn't treat our workforces as not capable of knowing. They should hear straight from the leadership. So that's important, because people don't want to be fed the algorithm that comes through your social media.
Really interesting. You've certainly provided a lot of food for thought in that last response, not just lessons on the journey everyone's been going through with COVID, but also moving forward. And that brings an end to our time on this edition of Resource People Podcast. Hamish Johnson, thank you so much for not only sharing Compass Group's experience over many years in terms of workforce mental health and wellness, but in particular sharing the company's journey of the Got Your Back campaign. We really appreciate you sharing all the ins and outs of the program for people to learn about as they go on their own organizational journey around mental health and wellness. So thank you so much, Hamish, for your time today.
Thank you, Tara. Really enjoyable.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Hamish about the Got Your Back campaign that Compass Group have been rolling out. Such an important initiative in their organisation, and I hope it might have inspired you or given you some ideas. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Resource People Podcast, and hope we have you back soon.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.